It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Into the second hour of the program, also into the final hour of the show this week. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. If you want to join us, you can text or tweet in. If you tweet and or text in, you can text in at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, or tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air. Got a text message. We were talking about Nolan Gorman before we took the break. Text message from the 256 says about Nolan Gorman. With all the time he has been given so far, he has only gone backwards. If he becomes an all-star somewhere else, so be it. But if the Cardinals really are taking next year off, I guess maybe keep him unless he's holding someone back. Says maybe a new coach will have a new approach. The idea of swing hard in case you hit isn't working. I would just remind folks, when he was in the minor leagues before he became a Cardinal and putting up huge numbers at Memphis, the clamoring for him was, it was as much, in the last, admittedly, I wasn't here covering the Cardinals, but I was working the division from St. Louis, always followed along with the Cardinals, but I can't think of, and maybe there is one, and I just can't think of it off the top of my head, I can't think of a single player in the last 10 or 15 years who was at AAA, who Cardinals fans wanted to see more than Nolan Gorman. It was the social media desire for Gorman to become a Cardinal at that point was insane. And it wasn't per se wrong. I'm fine. We don't need to go back and relitigate that. But just think about what you're saying now about Gorman and compare that to where he was at that point as a young guy, as a prospect who has yet to make his major league debut. You have to give him the opportunity. I think if he does go somewhere else, he's going to thrive. I've seen this before. That doesn't even mean that I'm guaranteeing that the new folks involved with the Cardinals are going to be able to fix him. Maybe a year from now, we are having a discussion about him playing on another team. But if you are going to redo player development and redo the way that you kind of evaluate players and just all the, every organizational philosophy I'm sure is being looked at, if you're going to do all this stuff and you've got a guy who profiles out like Nolan Gorman, man, you got to give him every chance in the world. And maybe he doesn't run with it. Maybe he continues to be a sub 200 hitter that strikes out 2.5 times a game. And that just doesn't play at the big league level, obviously, even if he runs into a home run every once in a while. That's not a big league player. I get that. I understand that. So even if it results in just what we've already seen continuing, man, you got to give him every opportunity in the world to take that step forward again. If you're going to believe in the people that you're bringing into the organization, whose job it is to make players better, well then, you don't just walk. This is not the offseason to walk away from Nolan Gorman. It's just not. It just absolutely is not. We'll get a little more about Gorman in a second. We're going through the list from MLB Trade Rumors of the players who are most likely to be traded. And when we broke for the 7 o'clock news, we were talking about Nolan Arenado. He's 10th on the overall list, 3rd Cardinal listed. At this point, it just makes sense. I think the Cardinals still want to dump a little bit of salary, maybe not quite as much as they wanted to a couple weeks ago, but I still think there is salary to dump. Nolan Arenado, of everybody there, maybe from the outside, looks like the guy who is least willing to be on a team that is not competing at a high level. Now, he's got full no-trade clause. Where would he go? There's been a lot of teams that have been rumored to have some interest in him. Philadelphia, Boston, even the Yankees. Do they find a way to make it work in Los Angeles? That's where he'd like to go, you would think. You get the sense he'd love to be a Dodger. They've got a guy at third who's pretty good. Do they find something else with Max Muncy and get Arenado over at third? Do they find a way to make that work? I don't know. The financial side of this thing is very messy. He's guaranteed $74 million through 2027. The Rockies are still going to pay $5 million of his contract in 2025. So this year, if he gets traded, he'll get paid by three different teams. There's a lot of deferred money on his deal. The deferred money, and I'm not against deferred money, but when you actually see it like written down year by year, it looks crazy. The deferred money on Arenado, his $20 million of his 2021 salary is being deferred from 2022 to 2031. So from 2022 to 2031, he gets an extra $2 million each year. And then $30 million of his salary from 2022 to 2026 is being deferred at $3 million annually each year starting in 2032 and going to 2041. So the Cardinals are set to pay Nolan Arenado up until his age 50 year. His last payment from the Cardinals is scheduled for a $3 million payment on July 1st of 2041 when he's 50 years old. So this is, it's just a very complex, and if you trade him, how much of that deferred money goes along with him where all of a sudden the Cardinals aren't the team that's paying that deferred money anymore? I don't know. That's what, it's just very complicated. Of all the things that could that might happen, working through the financials of trading Nolan Arenado, incredibly, incredibly complicated. All right, number 11 on the list, the fourth player listed for the Cardinals is Sonny Gray. He's guaranteed $65 million through 2026 with a $25 million salary in 2025, $35 million in 2026, and then the team has an option at 2027 at $30 million with a $5 million buyout. Again, this list was put out before the news of the week. I think all indications are that Sonny Gray is going to be back with the Cardinals. This is one of those things where if you're absolutely blown away with an offer, where a team is going to give you a really good package of players and pick up all of his salary, then John Mozeliak and company have to listen. But outside of that, I would say that Sonny Gray is going to be a Cardinal next year. And if it's just going terribly poorly for the Cardinals, then maybe you have a conversation at the trade deadline about him. But I don't want to spend too much time on something that just doesn't seem likely to happen. So Sonny Gray on this list, yes. A week ago, we would be talking about this differently than we're talking about now, just based off what Mo had to say at the GM meetings. And that also very much applies to the next name on this list, number 12 overall on the list of 35, number 5 from the Cardinals listed in Wilson Contreras. He's not getting traded. I say that. He and all, like 99% chance he's not getting traded. Another situation where, look, if a team all of a sudden, if there's a crazy injury that happens to somebody training in the offseason and they really need a catcher, they really need a first baseman, and they're willing to give something up big time for Wilson Contreras, then you don't hang up the phone. But right now, and again, Contreras, not indications are that he's not waiving his no trade clause, so it would have to be the perfect team in that as well. But we talked about it earlier in the week, Contreras going over to first base. This list was put together before that news came out. He would probably either not be on the list or be much lower on the list if that news would have come out previously. Next on the list, number 20 overall. This one's interesting. This is one where I think maybe people outside of St. Louis don't have as much of a grasp on it as people inside of St. Louis, and that's Brendan Donovan. I understand why you would put him on this list. Arbitration eligible through 2027, so low salaries, probably be under $4 million this upcoming season. Can play everywhere, can play at a high level everywhere. Profiles as a player that you want on a winning team. You never put it 100% no. I would be so shocked if the Cardinals moved on from Donovan. I would be so shocked if they moved on from him. He is everything they want in a ball player. Last year, when there was so much talk about who was going to fill the leadership void, he was the first player they talked about. The way he plays the game, just everything about him screams St. Louis Cardinal. They love him. And I think they value him more. It's very common for teams to value their own players more than the industry values them. That's why it's sometimes tough to work out deals. I think the Cardinals value Donovan more than any other team in baseball could potentially value him, and that would mean it's going to be tough to move him. Number 21 on the list, we've already had a long conversation about him, but we don't, so I don't need to spend too much time on it. Nolan Gorman. I think right now, if you trade him, it's a sell low situation. Now, look, you look at the roster, you've got Brendan Donovan, you've got Thomas Ajayi, you've got J.J. Weatherholt on the way. Like, you've got guys. So if all of a sudden Nolan Gorman's not on the roster anymore, you've got guys to play positions that you feel comfortable with. But this is, the Cardinals have traded way too many guys in a sell-low situation. And I'll repeat it one more time. When you are going through a reset like they're going through, and they're really believing in the people that they're bringing into the organization and really feel like they are going to be better at making players better, this is not the time to trade them. If it doesn't work this year and you trade them for equivalent of what you got for Dylan Carlson, so be it. I am not going to be critical. This is not the offseason to trade young guys who are underperforming. This is the offseason to make sure that they've got an opportunity to be coached by the new people and to be led by the new people and to be given the resources. And we'll see how much is actually in place come spring training, because a lot of the technology and infrastructure and equipment and everything that's being brought in will be brought in after this upcoming spring training, because that's when they're going to break ground on redoing the spring training facility. But I would assume that from a technology standpoint, it is going to be at least a little bit beefed up for this year's spring training. I'd be shocked if there's not some investments that are made prior to this year's spring training, so you give guys as much of an opportunity as possible to take that step forward. We're going to continue a version of this conversation. We're doing this probably just about every Friday moving forward. There's always a bunch of Cardinals news during the week, and we go through all of it and break it all down with the former host of this show. Now you hear him on the Dave Glover Show. You hear him on the Gas House Gang, which is noon Monday through Friday, replayed at 8 o'clock. So you're going to hear a lot of Kevin Wheeler over the next 90 minutes or so. He's got the Gas House Gang tonight with Bernie Miklas from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. But before we get to the Gas House Gang, I've got a conversation with Kevin Wheeler, so that's going to be coming up in just a few moments or so as we go through the payroll implications of what we learned this past week, whether or not they're going to trade Nolan Arenado, where Arenado could get traded to. That's all coming up in just a moment here on KMOX. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. You know, we did this last Friday, and we've obviously had Kevin Wheeler on the program a lot, former host of Sports
Open
Line.
Sorry about that.
But I enjoyed last week on Friday bringing him on and just kind of doing a look back at the week that was, because every week for the Cardinals, I think, is going to look a little bit different. And we do bring Kevin Wheeler, now from the Dave Glover Show, on. Hey, Wheels.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Yeah. And just at the top, in just a little while at 8 o'clock, we're going to have a replay of the Gas House Gang from earlier today. You and Bernie Miklas get into a whole lot of things.
Yeah, we kicked around like potential destinations for Nolan Arenado. Right? There are reports that he's going to be shopped. We knew that. I mean, I think you knew that by what wasn't said in San Antonio at the GM meetings, right? Because we saw the reports that Sonny Gray and Wilson Contreras had said they're in. They want to stay. But we didn't hear that about Nolan, so it kind of led you to believe that he would be, and when you do the math on who goes where, when you move all the pieces around, somebody would have to go. One, he's the one that makes the most sense.
He does.
And by the way, for him too, I don't want to make this out like Nolan bad guy, you know, like Nolan wants out. That's not what I'm saying at all. And I don't think you are, and certainly Bernie wasn't when we talked about it. It just makes sense for him at his age, with what your team needs to do as far as finding places for players to prove themselves. And with Contreras moving to first, it just limits the other options. So somebody, if it's not him, somebody else has to move to make room.
The team that most gets mentioned right now is the Philadelphia Phillies.
That's a good fit.
It's a great fit.
They got to move Bohm, but I think they would.
Yeah. I am curious how willing Arenado would be to go further east.
That's the question.
Yeah.
We don't know what he wants. I know he probably, we know he loves the Dodgers, right? We know he wanted that probably before St. Louis, but the Rockies were like, we're not trading him in our division. But the Dodgers is a more complicated fit. First of all, they have a lot of big contracts. Second of all, they have a third baseman right now in Max Muncy that's pretty good.
Real good.
Now, he's not great. He's not an elite player, but he's an elite power guy. Gets on base, left-handed bat, and they don't have anywhere else to put him necessarily because they've already said that they're bringing Mookie Betts back to the infield. At least that's the plan. They have Gavin Lux in that mix, who they could also trade.
I think they trade Lux. I think probably like his time,
and he's got value.
Yeah,
but if they're trading him, they're getting something good in return.
Right.
And it could, maybe it's a pitcher. Who knows? But like they've got to move a bunch of pieces to make Arenado work for them, and maybe they will. I mean, they're in a window. They just won the World Series. They've got all the money in the world. That shores up their defense at the hot corner. So there's a scenario where you could do it. Right. It just takes a lot of movement. It's a little less for Philly. Right. A little less difficult. I think there's a possibility that makes some sense in Boston because there's already been some buzz there that they're thinking about moving Devers off third because they don't like his defense there.
Yeah.
So they could move him to first. There's been some buzz. They want to trade Tristan Casas, the young power hitting first baseman, because I don't know, there's some miscommunication stuff going on there. There seems to be some personality related things. I don't mean like he's a bad guy that they just, I think his injuries and things have them maybe thinking about a different direction, but they could also make Devers a DH too, right? They could do things like that. I think the Yankees could be a fit. It's not not a lock, requires some pieces to be moved, but they don't really have a third baseman. They're not keeping Jazz Chisholm there. He's going to move to second base and replace Gleyber Torres. And they're in a position to where they want to win now, but the problem there is they're very right-handed. And if they add another right-handed bat, especially if they lose Soto, I think that messes with their balance. But another team that makes a lot of sense, if Alex Bregman leaves Houston. Arenado makes so much sense there.
And he's also said that he's willing to move positions.
Yeah, Bregman.
Yeah.
Right. So who knows where free agency takes him. So if he leaves, Arenado's a great fit because Houston's trying to win. He keeps them from dropping off defensively because Bregman's a strong defender. So you get an equal trade there, probably maybe a little better with Arenado. But you put Arenado in that ballpark with the short porch in left field, the Crawford boxes. I didn't look, but I bet you he hits 5 to 8 more home runs just from the ballpark being there instead of Busch Stadium.
Yeah, I would, and that's true about a lot of ballparks.
It's true about Bregman.
Yeah.
It's true about Altuve, right? So, but from a ballpark fit, from a quality of team fit, it's further west. Like, that makes a lot of sense depending on other things.
I think he would be more, I don't know this for sure, but I think he'd be more comfortable going to Houston than going to Boston.
Yeah, or New York or whatever. And again, you never really know, but there aren't that many teams that fit the proper description, right? Contender that has the money to take at least some of that on. And, you know, who knows what you're going to get in return. I wouldn't get my hopes up. If I'm a Cardinals fan, I wouldn't be thinking you're getting a top 100 prospect or anything. You're probably not. Not unless you're eating a huge chunk of that money. And I don't think they want to do that. I think they would rather strike a middle balance where they save a lot of that money and get a solid return instead of we'll eat it all and get a better return.
I don't know if you read it the same way I did. And I wasn't in San Antonio at the GM meeting, so all I can do is read quotes.
Yeah, read the
from
words,
John
yeah.
Mozeliak. I'm not there to like hear it. But it feels like his tone about payroll and things like that was just a little bit different at the GM meetings than it was at that press conference at the end of the season in the season also, the video conference they had. It feels like coming out of those two things, I thought, okay, they're going to dump a lot of payroll. And now it almost feels like they're a little bit more comfortable with where they're at right now.
That's what I read, too. I thought the same thing. But I think, you know, compare what we know now to what we didn't know then. I mean, you know who you've let go, right? It's at least $60 million worth of commitments from 2024 that are no longer on the books, right? With Kittredge and Gallegos and Paul Goldschmidt and the two pitchers at Gibson and Lynn. So that's a lot of money that's already off. And I got in reading his quotes, and I saw them in Derek Gould's story, but I think Katie Wu had the story too, where he was basically saying, yeah, you know, moving more would essentially give us a little more flexibility. I'm putting, those aren't his words, that's a paraphrase. but it doesn't sound like that's an imperative at this point, which is a good thing to know.
Yeah.
Because I don't think any of us want straight salary dump. We want baseball moves. And letting all the guys that you've let go, those are salary dumps, but those are also baseball moves.
100%.
Because you got to make room for different players who have higher upsides. Guys that might, or same upside, but much cheaper player, right? Like, that's what you're trying to create. And I took the same thing out of that. I thought that, well, you know, I mean, obviously, we know the TV deal is at least now is a certainty. They've agreed to a deal. So they know what their revenue is. They know where there's some possible growth there. They know that gambling is in, right?
Also, I mean, a big deal.
Yes. So I think that certainty is probably why you heard a little different tone.
Okay, so their TV deal, according to the Post-Dispatch reporting, is they're taking about a 23% cut from what they were making last year. It's like $17 million.
Yeah.
That sounds like a big number, and it is a big number. Nobody out there, I don't want to walk
That's in. That's Gallegos and Lynn.
But I don't want to walk in tomorrow and find out that I'm making 25% less than I was
making. No, so you're right.
I'm not trying to just be completely dismissive that 23% is
now
nothing.
But keep in mind, it's only that of that particular slice of the pie.
Right.
Their national TV money is not going to change. They do have to worry about the attendance piece.
Yeah. But specifically to that, where I'm trying to go with this is, if you went to Milwaukee, if you went to Minnesota and you told them, hey, you can re-up with your TV partner and you're going to take a 23% cut, in our current environment, those teams would be running to sign that deal. Yeah. Their cuts are going to be so much more significant.
Well, Minnesota's were last year, yeah.
Well, just going, I'm talking about the TV money alone.
Right, right. Last year, they already started cutting their payroll.
Because now that they're going to off of Bally and they're going to their own thing,
it's going to be a lot more uncertain.
It's going to be a lot more than 23% that they lose. The Cardinals actually come out of this in a pretty good spot.
Yes, and again, I think that may be the whole reason why we caught a different tone from Mo when talking about payroll, because you didn't take as big a haircut as you could have, and you got the gambling part coming in. I mean, that passed, so you know that's coming in, which is all good for the Cardinals. And again, I don't think payroll this year matters. I don't think anybody here, like if you're a baseball fan, if you're a Cards fan, don't even talk payroll this year. It's not worth it. It's not the point. Now, one thing I would say is, if you do happen to find yourself in the fortunate position in July where you're kind of in it, well, go get something.
Right.
Go make your team better, right? Like, this is not a give up, no, oh no, we're riding it out. But they do have to do what Mo talked about in San Antonio, which is you got to ride through some rough times with guys you think can be impact players. You can't keep changing them out because you're hyper concerned with losing every game. Every game you lose. And I get it, man. The last 2 years, they got a slow start. You're panicking. They haven't dealt with that. This franchise hasn't lost like that, like they did early 2023, early 2024. They don't usually do that. So I think they handled it poorly. They seem to be acknowledging that. And now this is about giving people some runway to not only prove themselves, but to be able to ride the wave a little bit. Get out of the slump before you go to Memphis.
I would also argue that the first bit of news we got this week are kind of going in reverse, talking through everything. Wilson Contreras going over to first base. I think that makes the lineup better. I think it creates some stability. If the idea is to keep Contreras healthy and keep his bat in the lineup every day. And if that happens, if that works, and this isn't a guy moving from second to third, this is a guy moving from a position that takes a heavy toll on your body, as you know as well as anybody wills, to a spot that takes, not that it takes none, but it takes a whole lot less. If the gamble on keeping him healthy works, this is a move that makes the team so much better offensively.
I love it because for a couple of reasons. One, because you're creating opportunity for younger players in Pajes and Herrera, who both have upside, right? And they showed that. You know, Pajes much more defensively, Herrera more with the bat, but the combination of the two of them could be really nice. Mm-hmm. When you add it up at the end of the year, you might have a really nice combo there, and you got to find out, right? You're not going to find out if Contreras is catching. You're just not. But the other part of it is, like, as a catcher, let's say you stay healthy. Let's say Contreras is a healthy catcher. He's going to play 120 games. That's 42 games you're not going to have one of your best bats because you have to rest catchers. Nobody catches 150 games anymore.
No.
You can argue whether the guys in the old days used to or not. Yeah, and they used to throw 300 innings too. Nobody's doing that. We understand you perform better when you get more rest. And at that position, you need the recovery time. At first base, he could go play 150 games. That's 30 more games you'll have that bat in the middle of your lineup, forgetting injuries, right? And obviously, you take into the fact that you're less likely to get hurt at first. than you are at catcher. And think, I've said this, people, I'm sorry if there are any first basemen listening that are going to take this as an insult, but it's not meant that way. But if you can catch, you can play first base.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that anybody can play first base. It's not that easy. But I'm saying that the guy that usually is 60 feet, 6 inches away from a pitcher, scooping balls in the dirt, blocking pitches in the dirt, throwing runners out in 2.0 seconds or less, that guy has the reflexes, the footwork, and the willingness to get down and dirty on the balls in the dirt to play first base.
Yeah, the one thing.
And the hands. That's a key thing, the hands.
There's the mental part of it. You know, when there's that ball that's in the hole between first and second, the first baseman's got
to
make the decision on whether they pursue or whether they go back to the first base bag and stuff like that.
You'll notice some mistakes on that. Yeah.
And that just takes
time. Wilson's a good athlete, though.
I would agree.
He's not your typical catcher.
No.
He moves better than your typical catcher.
100% on that. There's been a lot of people putting down the defense of Páez and Herrera. For Páez, it's about the throwing. For Herrera, it's about everything.
His blocking was good.
Okay. I think this is one of those things, though, where people only watch the Cardinals and don't watch the rest of baseball, because really across baseball, not a lot of guys were getting. Now, the Cardinals weren't a very good base running team, so maybe you saw the Cardinals get thrown out a little bit more. But I'm not telling you that Ivan Herrera and Pedro Páez are good throwing runners out.
I'll tell you that Páez can throw. Okay. He'll throw runners out. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, I'm not. My point is,
Herrera needs a lot of work.
I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about that part of it.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the reason not to do this.
No, I agree with that. But also, here you go, former catcher speaking here. A lot of what I saw last year was on the pitchers.
100%.
A lot of it was on the pitchers. And it always is a combo. Now, with Herrera, it was a lot more on him. It just was. I mean, when you look at all the measurables, you look at his arm strength, you look at his exchange time, his overall pop time, he did not do well. Those are him problems.
Which would be nice if they had a catching instructor to help him with that.
Thank you. I'm available. And Páez, though, was better in those things. He does have above average arm strength. His pop time wasn't that bad on average, right? He probably needs to be more consistent. Both of them need to be more consistent with their ball placement. And we talk about that with quarterbacks, right? Mm. Good ball placement. That's huge for catchers.
Absolutely.
You've got a little bit of a window there. It's got to be below the knees. Ideally off the ground, but if it bounces, it bounces. But you really want it in that like 6 to 8 inch space between second and first. You actually want it in the base path so that it can be a catch and tag at the same time. And I noticed that with Herrera, ball placement's bad. He throws a lot of balls high, things like that. Whatever his problems are, I think are fixable. And I think with Páez, it's just too small a sample size. He didn't play that many games. What does that look like over 100 games when you get into a groove and you're playing every day or you're playing 4 days a week over the course of 3 or 4 months? I think that you look at him, he moves right, he's got the arm strength. I think he's going to be okay in that regard, but they got a lot of work to do with Herrera there.
That's Kevin Wheeler. We're going to hear a lot more of him coming up at 8 o'clock. He and Bernie Miklas have the Gas House Gang, which you can watch live at 12 noon, Monday through Friday, on all the KMOX Sports social media channels. It's podcasted as well. So we'll be hearing more from you coming up in just a while.
I'm sorry, everybody.
No, that's good. That's good. You have
There's a lot of Bernie, too, so just keep that in mind.
You've got presence today on, what, four straight shows on KMOX from DGS to TIPM to here. Here to Gas House Gang. So have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, buddy. See ya.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Back in on a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We are done at 8 o'clock. So coming up at the top of the hour, it is the Gas House Gang that is going to feature today Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas. If you're not familiar with it, it is a show that goes live at 12 noon every day. Not here over the air on KMOX, but on the KMOX Sports social media channels. Between myself, Kevin, Bernie, and Tom Ackerman, two of the four of us are together Tuesday through Friday, and then all four of us are together on Cardinals Mondays. And it's mostly Cardinals talk, but we certainly get into a few other things as well, including the St. Louis Blues. Let's talk about the Blues yesterday. Not great. Not a good effort for them. They lose at home to the Utah Hockey Club by a 4-2 score. Just not kind of the effort that they're looking for. And as they got onto the practice ice today, and really towards the end of the game yesterday, we saw some things starting to change for the Blues, because Pavel Buchnevich, who has been their second line center, well, he was moved back to his his natural spot of being on the wing. So he was on the top line with Braden Schenn and Jordan Kyrou. That means Dylan Holloway is going to move up into that second line center spot. And there just continues to be lineup changes. There's not been a whole lot of consistency, both because of injury and because of just not performing where the team wants guys to be performing. We continue to see different lines and different defensive pairings almost on an every game basis. After practice today, Drew Bannister did spend some time talking to the media, and he went into the decision-making process and what it means on moving Buchnevich to the wing.
You know, yesterday I thought when we did it in the third period, we had, you know, they started to get a little bit of traction, and obviously they scored the one goal. So, again, you know, yesterday was not a good game for us, so we have to make some changes, and that was one of the changes that we felt we'd make, whether we stick with it. But as of tomorrow, we want to try something different.
What was kind of Buchnevich's feedback on how he felt about playing center or how he felt about playing wing? What was the input that he would have?
He likes playing center. You know, he likes the opportunity, and he's doing everything in his power to learn the position. And I think, you know, the defensive part of the game comes very easily for Bucci, and he's been really good and committed to that. The faceoff part, he's been working at. He's finding himself chasing a lot of pucks, but it's not because he isn't trying at it. He's been working at it. You know, there certainly you're not going to get. I think the offensive side is something where, you know, he's trying to find himself a little bit and playing the center ice and getting the opportunities and the touches he needs to feel involved in the game. And I think that was, you know, that's probably, you know, where he's, you know, kind of searching for his game a little bit is through the middle on the offensive side.
The face-off part of it, is that just all about the repetition, or is there more to it than that?
I think it's repetition. It's you're going up against centermen that have been doing that for their whole life, but obviously, you know, I think, you know, when you have somebody that hasn't taken a lot of draws, I think it's incumbent on the wingers to help out a little bit more, the communication of what you're trying to do. You know, if you are going to tie up a draw, create more 50-50s and help out on the edge battles instead of losing, you know, draws clean.
Continuing on that conversation about Buchnevich, Bannister was asked, and he talked a little bit on the how Buchnevich is feeling about this, if this is an indictment on him and the way he's playing, and if he's eventually going to go back to center or not. He certainly, Bannister did talk through all of those things.
He does put a lot of pressure on himself, especially offensively, but, you know, defensively, I think he's played very well for us. He saw a lot of tough matchups, you know, playing against other teams' top lines. You know, he's done a real good job, but I think the frustration leads for him because he wants to, you know, contribute offensively all the time, too. So, he puts a lot of pressure on himself that way.
Do you still want to try him at center in the future, or?
Yeah, we're like I said, like tomorrow's just a game, and you know we'll move forward as we see fit. And right now, we're just going to play him on the wing for a game. But I still think, you know, he can be a real good centerman for us.
I mentioned a moment ago, it's not every game, but it seems like every game there have been changes. Guys come in and out of the lineup, and that happens. That's very few teams just keep their lineups all the way the same. And, you know, third and fourth lines, they change up. That final defensive pairing, you'll move guys in and out. That's normal. But what's not normal is just the amount of change we've seen this year with the Blues. They are still searching for a kind of a core group and core group of lines that's going to be able to work. And Bannister went through that on why they are continuing to make changes.
Right now, it's not working. So we can't stick with the same thing, you know, and, you know, whether it's our net front or our flankers or our guys up top, like we're searching for answers and trying to find combinations in the right spot for right now with the players that we have to have success.
At the end of the day, you got to score more goals, and they're not scoring on the power play. They're not scoring when they're at even strength. It's just not happening. Now, at times this year, it has felt like they've gotten shots and they've created scoring opportunities. The puck just isn't going into the net. At other times, it feels like they're not creating scoring chances, and that's kind of where they are at right now, specifically off that game against Utah yesterday.
I mean, obviously yesterday, I think the shot total was indicative of our game as a whole and our lack of forechecking and our lack of pressure that we had on. When you look at the chances, I think in the first period, we probably created, seven chances, and then it went, in the second and the third, we didn't create a lot of chances that we'd like to see, but last night was a game that certainly overall was off for us. So, when you're not forechecking, when you're not playing the right way, you're not going to get rewarded offensively.
That is Drew Bannister, the Blues head coach, speaking earlier today at practice. The Blues are back at tomorrow evening when they match up against the Washington Capitals. We'll take one more break. We'll come back and we will wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are starting to wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. It is a Friday night tradition. Actually, we've got a really cool next couple hours for you. For the next hour, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, it'll be the Gas House Gang as Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas will be with you. And then at 9 o'clock, it's the Rachel Zimmerman Show. So the Dave Glover Show is well represented over the next couple hours between Kevin and Rachel. We've already had Kevin on the show. Now let's bring Rachel Zimmerman on, who again is going to be on tonight at 9 o'clock. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Matt. How cool is it to be a part of the Gas House Gang, by the way?
It's so much fun.
I bet.
Yesterday, Thursday, we did, it was just me and Bernie, and literally we did 40 minutes on all aspects of Wilson Contreras moving to first base. And it's the, yes, you can do 40 minutes on that single topic, and it's the kind of geeky baseball conversation that I really enjoy.
I love that.
Yeah. So what do you have coming up on the show tonight?
I have a fun show. I have Steve Ewing from The Urge. Mm-hmm. He stopped by the studio earlier this week for a nice little interview. They have a show coming up at the Pageant on November 29th, and they always do it up big. They're really doing it up big this year. So we talk about that, talk about Steve's hot dogs, because he obviously has that going on. I'm also going to talk to Kelly Jackson, who I talked to on election night. I'm replaying that, basically, talking about like political memes and just internet culture in the political season. Mm-hmm. So that's a fun interview. So yeah, it's going to be a good one. I hope everybody tunes in.
It's been an interesting week for you. You've done, obviously, Dave Glover's show, and you guys did a lot of politics on that. You were involved in KMOX's election night coverage on Tuesday. You're doing this. What, as you look back on election 2024 and everything that went along with it and kind of what you've done from an on-air perspective, what stands out about this week?
Oh, wow. That's funny. I was just telling Sue Thomas from KFDK earlier today, it feels like this week has been like 3 weeks in one. Mm-hmm. Like it just feels like so much has happened. I'm really relieved it's over. The thing that really stands out to me is I was surprised that we knew the election results the day after. I really thought it was going to be like 4 or 5 days. To me, that was a relief that we could just kind of be like, okay, this is what's going on. We can move on now. Everyone can choose how they're going to react to this information, but at least it's not hanging over our heads anymore. So I was very happy that it wasn't like days and days of uncertainty.
And for people who stayed up, I think Trump talked like 2 o'clock, 1:30,
2 or 3 o'clock. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I stayed up watching. So I went to bed that night knowing
what was
president.
Going on.
I know your focus was on kind of younger people and talking to them. It was looking at the numbers, and obviously we know who got elected and we know a lot of demographics that went along with that. But man, oh man, oh man, it really seemed like people who were born in the 80s and 90s really turned on this election. I mean, you can make the argument that a lot of different demographics made the difference, mm-hmm. but you can make the argument that people kind of in our age group born in the 80s and 90s have a really large impact on who this next president is going to be.
Absolutely. You know, millennials are a huge generation. We're like as big as the baby boomers were. Gen X is a little smaller. Gen Z is a little smaller. So I think that's going to be a trend you're going to see in elections to come, too, is like our age group is going to have a huge say because there's so many of us.
Yeah, it certainly is interesting. So we'll be listening tonight. Great job this week. And
thanks,
go
Matt.
Enjoy yourself a weekend and a couple days away from it all.
Thank you so much.
That's Rachel Zimmerman. She's got the Rachel Zimmerman Show tonight, 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock. You can also podcast it wherever you get your podcast. Just do a search for it. And that's going to do it for this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. Again, we've got the Gas House Gang with Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas. That's on the way next right here on KMOX.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.